The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by a comic shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com. For those of you joining us for the first time, RPG From Scratch is where the homebrew hombres, Doug Banks, Liam Malone, Max Wessel, and myself, Josh LaForge, try to build a tabletop RPG that satisfies everything we want, whether that's character creation, combat mechanics, or role-playing opportunities. Our goal is to turn this eventually into a live play podcast once we've settled upon the rules. If you have any suggestions or criticisms for what we're cooking up, please post them on our page on the Nerdy Show forum. We will be checking it regularly. I'm your host, Josh LaForge, and with me today is Liam Malone.
Hi, guys.
Max Wessel.
What's up, tweethearts?
And Doug Banks.
Yo.
We all have different backgrounds, somewhat similar in playing RPGs and DMing and things like that. So why don't we go around the group and talk about our individual experience?
I started playing 3.5 in high school, played for a couple years, and then I graduated to running 4th edition games, played some Call of Cthulhu, Deadlands, just a lot of like one-off RPG stuff. Oh, Saga Edition, lots of Saga Edition, really liked it. D20 Modern, which was not good, but I still played a lot of it.
D20 Modern, that's a more universal one like we're trying to create.
Yeah,
right?
But it has credit checks in it instead of money. And that was a mechanic I despised with the core of my being.
Okay.
Can you explain that?
You would roll randomly to see if you could buy something based on your job.
Like actual credit checks?
Yeah, like...
Oh, that's terrible.
Oh, my God.
We're planning to get away from that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was so bad. And so you'd complete a mission, and then as a reward, you'd get money, but you just get, like, the idea that you have more money always. It was bad.
That sounds terrible.
I rolled a 6. I get a lot of credit now.
It seems like a money system is something you could just tack on to whatever world you have. So, like, maybe if you created several different money systems that you could use. It's like gold pieces wouldn't work in a modern setting. But you'd use
scripts.
Dollars, you know, or whatever.
Pounds. Sterling.
What about you, Max?
I would say I probably have the least amount of experience of anyone in the podcast. I played about 10 to 12 games of Star Wars Saga with Liam, which is awesome. I'm currently involved in a few and far between Star Wars D6. I don't know what the name of that system is. Does anyone know?
Is it like the Edge of the Universe or Outer Rim Rogues or something?
Something. But it's a really easy system to get into for new people, the D6 system. I have played some D&D 3.5, maybe 5 or 6 games of that, which I quite enjoyed. That's about it.
What about you, Doug?
Well, I didn't play any tabletop games until a couple years ago. I was an adult man by the time I started playing these games. And, the first one was 4th edition D&D, and it was DM'd by Liam. And I had so much fun, I was like, oh, are there more things like this? And then I played two more 4th edition games, another one which was DM'd by Josh. And after that, I started to run my own Ghostbusters D6 game. I have since played Call of Cthulhu and the World of Warcraft tabletop game and a couple other ones like Fiasco and Microscope.
What's the World of Warcraft tabletop game? I've never heard of that.
It's you're just basically in the World of Warcraft and I don't know how else to describe. I played as like a human rogue and we only played for like 2 sessions. But it was pretty good. It was basically using like a D100 system, using 2D10s for all of your attacks, you know. And whenever the higher number you score, that's the percentage, you know. And it was okay. It played similar to Call of Cthulhu.
Interesting.
Ugh. What? Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about that game.
I think Call of Cthulhu greatly depends on the DM running it more so than most other games.
I feel like even with a great DM running it, it's still.
A great DM would make it fun. that's like saying even if it was fun, it wouldn't be fun. It's like, well, no, it would. That's the starting point. Is that it's a good version.
I think I'm just not a fan of that premise.
Yeah, I don't want to play a horror. It's a horror game.
Yeah,
I don't like the premise of playing it, which is my fault.
I think that no matter what game you're playing, as long as the people in it are in it to have a good time, you're gonna have fun. You know, and if you're familiar with these people and they're not dicks,
just like the
Josh. What about your experience?
Oh. I actually started playing 3.5 with Liam few years ago, and it was a campaign DM'd by a friend of ours, and it was fun to finally play a tabletop RPG, but 3.5 was not my bag at all, man. It was everybody's turn took way too long. It was I played a monk, and I didn't know that that was a piece of shit. Like to play in 3.5, and I'm like, why am I not doing anything cool? Why am I always missing? This sucks.
I think my first 3.5 has the same story of my friend who picked a monk and was just like, this should be cool.
Nope.
It's not.
It's not cool. It's not cool in 3.5, at least not when I was playing it. And then I was like, oh, well, maybe it'll be better if I play as a Vow of Poverty monk where you get extra bonuses for not taking any magic items and stuff. And that sucked too. But then I played I DM'd a 4th edition game. With a bunch of friends. I DM'd several, actually. I DM'd...
The Savage Races one was my favorite.
Yeah?
Oh, God, I loved it.
So I did one that was just basic fantasy where they had to fight each other and stuff several times. And then the next one I did was a Savage Races campaign where everybody played as, like, orcs and goblins and...
That's my dream game.
What's the hyena race?
Gnolls.
Gnolls. Played as gnolls. And then I did a 4th edition campaign as well afterwards where it was called The Dead Feathers, about a group of 4 fantasy world special forces who had since retired and suddenly got sucked back into that world of trying to solve this crazy ancient mystery, but now that they're all older and family men, and then joined up with a half-orc ship captain and his first mate, Lunchbox, the the near-naked dwarf.
Near-naked was his actual middle name.
But I played a campaign DM'd by Liam. I've been playing Ghostbusters DM'd by Doug. The Ghostbusters Resurrection podcast, if you guys haven't heard it, is hilarious. He does a great job.
Thank you.
But that's it for me. I mean, each one of those systems has things that I like and things that I don't, even 3.5. But that's really why I wanted to do this, is because we all are itching to play. You know, we really, really all want to play. But it'd be nice to have a system of our own, because D&D is, as much as I love it, is... very restrictive. I'm not real keen on the 5th edition changes either.
For me, the whole thing is always edition wars, where some people only, they refuse to play anything but Pathfinder. I know I have 2 people who refuse to play anything other than AD&D. I have to drag them kicking and screaming to the table, and I'm like,
I don't understand. Like, for me, it wouldn't matter.
Thaco.
I have editions that I prefer, but... it's the people that, like, if they're like, yeah, it's a group of friends and we're going to play just a crazy homemade game that we have to play in a specific alley in the middle of the night. It's like, as long as I'm into it with the people, I don't care how shitty the system is. We're going to have fun.
But I mean, like, I always prefer to do 4th edition D&D to DM, because it's just...
it's very straightforward.
It's super, a lot, way easier than 3.5 or even 5.
Now, I know that's a common criticism of it, is that people think it's too complicated. I did not have that.
I could bullshit my way through that system pretty well by the end of it.
So would you say someone trying to get into 4th would probably be...
I mean,
I think if you were going to start playing D&D, 4th edition would be a great one.
Okay. Doug,
that's where you started. What do you think?
I freaking loved it. And like, anytime I hear somebody complain that it was like, oh, there was no room for role play, and, you know, like, turns took way too long, I'm like, I wouldn't try to tell them that they were wrong to start an argument,
like,
because people
were
very passionate about this
game?
But my entire experience was the exact opposite of everything they said. Like, we played very strong role playing, and once we got in the groove of things, our turns were really quick. We worked well as a team, but it may have been the people that I was with. I consider myself very lucky with my first exposure to tabletop games, because all of my experiences were pretty positive.
I think one of the issues is that people see so much focus on the combat mechanics of the classes in 4th edition that they're like, oh, this doesn't have much room for role-playing. They didn't focus on the role-playing. But I think what they didn't realize is that when you have that kind of laser focus on what this class can do, it actually kind of shapes the way you look at your character.
It can inform everything else.
Exactly. Like, you get a new ability that allows you to do certain things, and you're like, oh, yeah, I guess I am kind of the guy who does that kind of thing. So how does that guy think?
Yeah, when you can fly, how does that change your mindset?
Yeah, it's like, how does your character deal with this now?
Yeah, well, and they also, the alignment system was way fast and loose compared to the other ones.
Yeah, which I much prefer.
I enjoyed that, because, man, in 3.5, your alignment depicted, like, it decided way too much for you.
And I've read so many horror stories about paladins. Losing all of their abilities because a DM's like, oh, you wouldn't do that, your alignment shifted.
Yep.
Yeah, I think...
God came down and was like, you're a bad person now.
And paladins are the worst anyway.
I don't know. Do we need to focus a lot on role-playing mechanics? Because I like the skill system in D&D, but it's so limited. Ugh. You can never... Here's the problem. Is people said there's not enough skills in 4th edition, and it's true. There's not enough. But then you go to 3.5, and there's tons of skills, and it's still not enough. There's never... Like, there will never be
a I feel like the role-playing comes from you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's coming from your brain. All the system, you need the combat system.
I like.
And the world.
But I do like one of the things that 4th edition did was it made very broad skill sets where one was like subterfuge.
Yeah. Nature.
We're like, yes. And like subterfuge was like pickpocketing.
Streetwise, dungeoneering.
Streetwise, yeah. It was a bunch of. I like that because, of course, if you're good at one of those, the idea that the other ones are in your skill set as well as a rogue isn't crazy.
Yeah, not that far out of your skill zone.
And the. The way skills work in the Ghostbusters West End version that that we're playing with Doug is even broader, where you just roll based on your base ability score. Mm-hmm. You get that many dice. You get that many D6s to roll. But you have a specialization in each one, and for that specialization, anything related to it, you get 3 extra dice. So my character has a brains of 3, but his specialization is occult. So I roll 3 brains for anything I want to know. Unless it's occult related, and then I roll 6. That's a good. That's a reasonable system. I like the way that works. I wonder if there's a way to drag that over to ours or something similar, because it's very. It's a good touchstone for role playing.
Yeah, and but I also want to make sure that even if you don't have the main stat for something, if you're dedicated to a thing, you should be able to get good at it.
Yeah, I actually brought up one of the games I want to eventually run is the World of Indiana Jones, which is another West End Games D6 RPG. Obviously, I wanted to run that because I've only run one kind of game, and it's a very simple game, so the next one I do will be slightly more complicated, but also very similar. But Indiana Jones, the D6 one, has a really interesting system for leveling up your skills. Like, you might start with a firearm skill, but if you actually, in-game, take the time, you're like, I'm going to go practice... And I'm going to go practice shooting bottles. And you roll a couple times on that, and eventually you can save up enough points. You can get better in the weapon of choice. And you can learn languages. Other characters can teach you a language if you don't know a language. And you can study learn occult things, or you can learn religious things. And it really is about your character growing.
That's role-playing and mechanics working together.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I've never seen that where, like, you get your base languages, here you go.
Good luck.
Yeah.
You'll never talk to a Wookiee ever.
If someone in your party is, like, a Wookiee, why can't you... You're sitting on a spaceship for 6 months. Why can't he teach you?
Why can't you learn Cherry Wook? Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? That's a really good idea, and I think there's a good way to do that. Because I like the idea of the West End Games version of Ghostbusters. It's all about resource management for improving your base attributes. But if you had a way to spend resource to learn skills that you would otherwise spend on XP or things like that, I think that's a really good way of approaching it. I do also kind of like the, like, for whatever specialization you have in a very broad skill, you get a bigger bonus. Like, if you're really good at, so if I'm like, oh, I'm really good at stealth, but pickpocketing is a special subset of stealth. Yeah. Then I get an extra bonus. I get my whole stealth roll plus the pickpocket bonus or whatever to pickpocket somebody because it's more difficult. Something like that. But what do you guys not like? Okay, so Max, you've never DM'd.
No.
Okay. Well, what do you guys not like about DMing your favorite system?
For me, it would be 4th edition, and I have to say
Dungeons and Dragons. 4th edition.
There's a lot of lore stuff that's just a brick wall. Like the fact that all druid, like, there's a weird Emerald Dream realm.
Yeah.
And all dryads and stuff are from that. And, like, our own natural world is just shitty and not magical at all. It has to come from that. I don't like that. There's a bunch of stuff.
Do you not like it as a DM because it forces that to be in whatever campaign?
Yeah. Because there's a lot of stuff you lose out if you don't. And you can smudge stuff and work it in. But there's a lot of mechanical stuff that works based on that as well. Hmm. That when you take it away, sometimes you make monsters too good because they're no longer outsiders all of a sudden. And weaknesses are kind of always attached to what kind of creature you are. So that was always kind of a weird thing because I hated it. I didn't want to do it. And also I could talk about the fact that with the diversity of characters, every game someone would do something surprising and two people would do something so banal and so boring. then I'd be just like, oh, come on, do something fun, no, man.
Is that a problem with the system?
I think it is because the straightforward answers are so attractive. Like, they mechanically, they make so much more sense, and you could see their advantages immediately. So I think if you're a new person,
interesting.
I want a system where you decide who you want to be, and then you look at the book. I don't think that fourth edition is that.
I think you're right. I think that's absolutely true.
And it's not like, oh, horrible shortfall of it, but it's something ideal for
now,
me.
Now, to be fair, you could totally do that in fourth edition, but
I feel like
but
you
don't
want to
learn the mechanics that way.
Yeah.
I think you want to... You could do that in any version of D&D, but in any version of D&D, you have to learn the mechanics first. Like, you have to know how to build a character. You have to know what extra things to take from each class. I agree.
I like the idea of making your character and then looking at the book, because how many hours have been wasted looking through and be like, oh, but this guy can do this.
But this guy can do this thing.
And he can do this, and that would be useful.
But that's
and then
fun.
You're just gaming your own.
That's fun when you're not sitting at the table with them.
Absolutely true. You're 100% correct.
The first session of a Dean, everyone like, we finally get everyone to the table. Okay, everyone's here. Flip
Whole
open
day.
The books. Let's go.
It's interesting because my practice whenever I've DM'd a game is to get everybody that's going to play together on a day. We're not gonna do any mechanics, or we are going to do mechanics, and we're only going to build our characters. But first, what we do is we sit down and we decide what kind of game we want to play.
Right, right.
And I'll say, here, I've got things to work in this setting, or this setting, or this setting. Which of those settings appeals? Like, you're not going to pick a new setting. I'm the one who has to DM.
Yeah.
But I'm giving you an option here, and then you have to find out what reasons that their characters know each other.
It's a huge thing.
That's so important. The whole meeting in a tavern thing is bullshit. Like, there's no reason for these people to work together other than that you've all committed to it. If you can all figure out the relationships of your characters before you even make them, you're going to make better characters, and it's going to work
there's gonna be less combat and out of combat. There's going to be less infighting and more watching those weird mechanics interplay with each other and do something interesting rather than, I hit a thing again, because that's what I do.
And you're going to help each other reach your roleplay goals.
Yeah.
Well, cause you're going to look out for each other.
Emotionally committed to the team and less about, here's the character I brought with me that I'm committed to and I don't even know who my other people are yet, you know?
Exactly. Well, what about you, Doug? What don't you like about DMing Ghostbusters? That's system specific.
There's not a lot I dislike about it. I mean, the biggest critique I would say the system has is that it was designed like for children in mind. Like, it was designed not solely for a younger audience, but made that it was accessible to a younger audience. So, like, the game books really ask you to play, you know, hard and fast with the rules. Like, there's a lot of bluffing going on, unless you're like me and then you like stat the shit out of everything. Like, the version that you guys play on the podcast it's about half homebrew, and then the other half is out of the original book. It was so simple and so open that if anybody wanted to, as a player, they could completely break the system and take advantage of it. So
and it's hard, as a min-maxer, like myself, I'm totally a min-maxer.
Yeah.
I have a
could
hard time
that?
Kind of reeling that back in. Yeah, min-maxing is... when you look at the mechanics of a system and you're like, oh, I want to make the best possible character, period. Like, I want to use every rule to work in my advantage. I want it all to play off of each other. When in reality, you should have a character that's effective because it helps your group.
Yeah.
And it's more fun that way. But if you're a min-maxer, you kind of shit on the rest of the party sometimes if you're only thinking about yourself.
Does that have anything to do with your powerlifting background?
No. No, not at all.
Okay.
No, I started powerlifting much later than I started roleplaying. But I think the problem that Liam described, where you can't think of a character first and then go to the mechanics, the Ghostbusters game doesn't have that issue.
Yeah.
You have to think of who you are first and then start statting. And your stats are the only thing that matter.
Oh, no. Yeah, I agree completely. That's why the first time we sat down and talked about the Ghostbusters game with our group, I agreed to do like, oh, yeah, we all need to sit down, talk about what type of game we want to play first. And I really strongly suggested, I'm like, okay, I really think you guys should play yourselves, and I really think it should be modern day, local to our area. Reasons behind that were two. One, I didn't want to have to invent a bunch of crap, you know, because it was my first time DMing. But two, I figured if you guys just played as yourselves, you could stat yourselves much easier, and you all already knew each other. I didn't have to make up some BS story about how you all met somewhere. And
well, except for there just aren't enough stats for me.
Right. <yeah.
laughs> Wasn't Everybody enough starting gets this dice, many. You know? I'm like, no, I should get more. I should get more.
But yeah, like that was kind of the idea. It's like, okay, well, you guys would get really invested if you just played as yourselves. The humor would come naturally because you all already know each other, and it just felt very natural. So like, I liked it for that. But if you, I've heard other people play the Ghostbusters game and they make original characters, and it still suffered from that same problem where everybody was just focused on, I'm trying to be funny, I'm making my character funny. And then everyone's like, no, my character's funny. Basically, everybody wanted to be Venkman, but then when they all realized that none of them could be Venkman, they all wanted to be like the slapstick pratfall comedian. And it's just over and over and over again. And it became less about the game and more about just making jokes at the table. So that's, again, the only real critique I have is it's easy to break that game. Everybody has to be committed to just having fun and rolling the dice. Otherwise, you could easily go off the rails.
Yeah, I agree. And the DM's job in that game is much harder because everything's subjective. Like, you change your mind about, you have to be willing to flip-flop on anything at any moment because of how the mechanics work.
Yeah, and because
it's really unclear how health works in that system. You know, it's very...
Well, and the fact that anybody at any point can spend all their brownie points and override anything that you basically wanted to do. And yeah. I'm okay with that because it's all part of the game and it's all part of the fun, and it's the kind of story that we're telling where crazy, silly stuff can happen. But for someone else who maybe is taking it a little more seriously, or if you're trying to apply that system to another setting, it would break the game entirely, and it just would not work.
Oh.
Cuz like, it's funny cuz that sounds like big motherfucking crab truckers.
But the point of that is to break the game and be like, no fucking way. And then you just, you know.
Yeah, exactly. The DM just says, you do this, and you go, no fucking way, and you have to beat the DM's dice, and you're like, this is how it is instead.
Right, but if you were playing, as a grim dark, if you were playing in the 40K universe, it wouldn't feel right.
Yeah, it wouldn't make any sense. It would quickly be bananas wearing top hats. it wouldn't make any sense.
It'd be a lot like having a plot item that you need for your game and then someone breaks it.
Hey, to be fair, that person rolled four
D20s in a row.
Four criticals.
Four natural 20s.
That was me.
You son of a bitch.
I saw a challenge. I could... As for me, 4th edition is my favorite system to DM so far because it is a little simpler than the other versions. I don't have to know as many rules offhand. A lot of times the rules you can bullshit. Like, if you're like, oh, crap, I don't remember how that worked. Well, it probably works this way. Most of the time, you're right.
And if you look at them in the book, they have all of them there for you.
Yeah, exactly. But I'll say my biggest problem with 4th edition is loot. It is a nightmare to try to... I spend less time planning encounters than planning what loot I'm going to give you guys. It's just a nightmare. I mean, to make sure that the stuff I'm getting you is balanced and useful and not just garbage to sell, I really have to spend a lot of time looking up the items that are available in it.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a pain in the ass. Also, how you randomly generate encounters isn't really that cool or useful. So I just created my own way of doing it, which... was much faster. I mean, just
the epic items weren't really that good.
Or they're way too good.
Yeah. Parts of it could have been sillier. Every once in a while,
there's always got to be room for silliness.
There needs to be, especially like when you have a talking sword, it should be silly.
Yeah, unless it speaks a different language. Yeah. Well, that alone is silly. That's silly. Pretty silly already. Yeah. Okay, so we talked about mechanics a little bit and what we like about them, and. There are mechanics that assist in role-playing. Mainly they're like skill stuff and like abilities you get that allow you to convince people of things. And then there's combat mechanics. I feel like those should really be... There's got to be a way to keep them all together because Ghostbusters does that without too much problem, but it's very light on mechanics. I feel like a lot of people complained about the lack of role-playing in 4th edition, and we never had that issue. I mean, the entire combat encounters were total role-playing scenarios where people were making big character decisions in the middle of combat. I mean, no matter what, every game I played, every time I played it, that was an issue. But it was the same style of play as when we played 3.5. It was the same style. Oh, I played Saga Edition as well. When we played Saga Edition, it was the same thing, and definitely in Ghostbusters. So I don't know if we have to focus on the role-playing as much as maybe find a way to explain role-play.
It might not be rules. It might actually just be like a page of, hey, here's how to have fun.
Yeah, this is how to play this game and have the most fun. You know, like here's how to role play. Role playing works like this. You know, like just every move you're going to take, think about your character and what this means. And if you're going to do something contrary to what your character would normally do, think of a good reason. You know,
definitely. Yeah, I feel like the just looking through, like, I know the 5th edition manual, reading through, it gives you too much of what your character is. I look through gnomes, and I'm like, here's gnomes, here's what gnomes do. And I was like, every gnome doesn't do that, you know? Every gnoll doesn't act like this. Every human doesn't act like this. Don't tell me what I do.
Well, what mechanics would you guys like to see? We're going to build a system from scratch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What mechanics would you like to see in this system, or things that you would like mechanics to allow for?
Some of my favorite stuff are just ideas about... I know you were talking about doing a classless system.
Well, only not call them classes. I'll explain that in a second, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But some of the stuff I already have written for Armistice, one of the ideas would be this thing called the clash system, which you'd have one class or path that is... I think they're called gladiators right now. When a character meets your AC, you clash.
Okay.
Instead of just they get to hit you, you clash, and then you play rock, paper, scissors. And then depending on the outcome of the best out of three, they either miss you, you take half damage, you take full damage, or you get an attack of opportunity. That will definitely slow a game down if it happens a lot. But it doesn't really happen a lot.
I have rock, and it paper, could make scissors, something.
It could make, oh, damn, that'd be cool.
They're in my D&D box.
But that could add a really cool moment of tension all of a sudden, and makes a character really interesting, as long as not everyone chooses that class, because that'd be dumb.
So you mean, like, that's a trait of a specific...
Of a specific thing that you'd have to go pretty far down to get.
If that's not a base mechanic, that could be a really fun little
trait. Yeah, and it would come up, it would probably come up once, I'm thinking, like, once a session.
Or
and then,
once every couple sessions.
Depending on
how much combat or if you're playing a tank or not.
But I think that would be really a really fun thing for like a swashbuckler to be able to do, where there'd be a nice tense moment where a boss swings at him and then boom.
Yeah, they put their rapiers together and be like.
There's something dramatic to it that I really like. And playing rock, paper, scissors is a game that everyone already knows and can be done fast. Stuff like that I think is really fun, and it gets you away from dice rolling, and it gets you away from just thinking about the mechanics and start thinking about adventure.
Yeah, I like that.
We'd have to try it out.
As a base mechanic, but as a character feature, class feature, that sounds really interesting.
Well, that's one thing I'm definitely interested in class features being pretty distinct. Mm-hmm. And that when you play the same game, even in the same setting, if you have a different configuration of your party, the game will play wildly different. And even the tone and the pacing of it will change and be dictated by the characters who are playing it more than even maybe the Dungeon Master.
Interesting.
I like that idea only because it suggests to me from a role-playing standpoint, like if you would pick that feature and almost forget that you have it until you're, you know, in the middle of a fight and it's like, quick, we have to escape. And then like one random foot soldier or guard comes up to you and it's like he meets, you know, your defense and then you clash. And it's that moment of the entire party can look at it and be like, oh, what's a fellow breath? Chucker, eh? You know, like, you know, that sounds really fun. But again, that danger of wanting, you don't want to slow it down. Would you then, like, instead of rock, paper, scissors, would you just flip a coin, or would you like roll everyone loves rolling dice. Why not just roll another dice? Like it.
Maybe, but I like rock, paper, scissors because it isn't rolling a dice and it makes that character path different. It adds its own flavor. And I want every single path to have that, to where it doesn't feel like it plays like the other one. When you punch a guy, sure, that's the same. But when you do your cool little trick, that should feel viscerally different.
We'll have to play around with it. I do see what Doug's saying, because like, if we create a system where rock, paper, scissors is a key component,
a part of a thing,
we have to explain rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah.
We have to, like in that ability description, you have to be like, this is how you play rock, paper, scissors, guys.
Plus, I would also argue that rock, paper, scissors isn't truly random.
Right.
That's not truly random. That's kind of why I like it. If you're like, I'm good at rock, paper, scissors, I'm taking that
good
shit.
Good old rock.
Trusty rock.
Every time.
I am good at rock, paper, scissors, but I am not good at rock, paper, scissors, dice. I lost a drinking contest.
Well, you can't be good at a dice roll. Like, yeah. That's the point.
But I am way worse with those dice than I am with normal dice.
Hmm.
They're cursed.
No, you're cursed.
That's true. Cursed with being handsome.
Fuck you.
So what mechanics do you guys want to see in the system? So you said you're talking about clashing system. I really like the brownie point system from the Ghostbusters RPG.
Could you explain that a little more?
Yeah. The way it works is that your XP, your experience points in the game You don't have them. There's no levels. There's nothing like that. You gain brownie points for actions or ghosts you trap. Or for making
the DM laugh.
Yeah, for making the DM laugh.
Oh, I like that.
Right. So you get brownie points.
I like that more than anything.
That was like in your system, the role-playing points.
Oh, yeah. Right? The extra action points.
We did that in 4th edition. Yeah, that's right.
For doing something heroic. You're like, you're fucking a hero.
Here's another
now.
Action point.
Well, it was just role-playing. Like when you do, there's a, like the Star Wars game I play.
Yeah, an incentive.
The game master will give you an incentive for doing something your character would absolutely do.
Well, here's the other thing about brownie points is that the basic abilities, the attributes you get in the game are moves, muscle, brain, and cool. And how many points you have in that is how many die six you roll. If you spend a brownie point or several, that adds that many die sixes to your roll so that you have a much higher chance of succeeding. So obviously you don't even spend brownie points until you're like, I need this to succeed, period. And then you go overboard. Like that's what everybody does. But brownie points are also your health. In that game, in a way, you could spend brownie points, or you can lose trait points temporarily, which makes you worse in the present moment. Depending on how bad the injury is, for a very long time, like you have to go to a hospital, you know, you have to do all that stuff. So I like the brownie points. I'd like to modify it to be on a die 20 because I think we all prefer rolling a die 20, right?
Mm-hmm. For hitting, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just that's for the thing you roll the most, a die 20 is the most dramatic.
Each one is 5%. It's something that feels right.
And I don't want to pick some specialty craft number of sided die, like a 30 sided die or the D100, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, you can fudge a D100 with 2 D10s.
Yeah.
But I think the D20 is so ubiquitous as a sign of role playing.
Yeah.
We got to do that.
And so much fun to roll.
It's just satisfying. It is. Again, we're talking about
because when that 20 comes up or that 1 comes up, it's just the moment of fuck or fuck.
Each point on that is 5%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is way easier to balance. So, I also really want one of the main things I want to change in mechanics I've been thinking about is multi-classing. D&D has never done this well. Saga Edition did it pretty well. But still had the issue because they had different hit bonuses per level of per class.
Yeah,
they
would stack weird.
Yeah, so if you were like, oh, well, I want to gain a level in this class, or two levels in this class and one level in this class, you might not get a single increase to your hit bonus after you increase three levels if you're multi-classing.
Or you could do weird things where like, to be a Jedi, whatever, I need this base attack bonus, and the current class I'm doesn't give me that. So you just pick soldier once and throw that in, and you're throwing it, again, for mechanical reasons rather than
story reasons.
Then gameplay reasons, and then you start doing weird stuff. Like then the game is running you, not the other way around.
But to be fair to Saga Edition, it's the best version of multiclassing I've ever seen.
I really enjoyed it, yeah.
I think I want to bring something like that to it, where Liam mentioned I wanted to make a classless system, but not really. You would have classes, but the classes would be all based around very specific mechanic. So Path of the Citadel would be you are a tank. It's sword and board. Everything you pick up in the Path of the Citadel is defensive. So you take instead of getting a level down it, you take a step down the Path of the Citadel, and you only get defensive abilities and proficiencies and bonuses and things like that. Then you take another step down there, you get a new defensive ability with new defensive bonuses. But there's no penalty for the next time you take a step to take it down a completely different path, but using a smaller number of attributes, like maybe 4 attributes instead of 6 like D&D, so that it's easier to have synergy across multiple paths. So that if you're a Path of the Citadel, but you go down Path of the Assassin, you can get a weapon bonus in the Path of the Assassin that will make your weapon of choice in the Citadel work better for you, or allow you to surprise certain opponents if they're flanking or things like that.
I don't see any reason against that at all.
Oh no, I see several reasons for it.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, the problem is it's complicated.
Well, it reminds me where you have to Skyrim.
That's a good example. Yes, Skyrim is a good one where you're gaining levels in specific
things that
trees.
You do.
Yeah, but I would like it to be that it's so encouraged to take steps down different paths that there's no XP system. You don't gain a level in the same sense that you gain it in Dungeons & Dragons or even Skyrim, where I would like it to be where you gain what we're going to call momentum instead of brownie points in the system. And momentum is how important you are to the story.
And Well, and also you could do something cool where, like, you got this much momentum from this task, and to take a step down the current path that you're on would take 30, or you could take 2 for 30 down another path and gain these 2 bonuses that are not as good, but a little more diverse.
Maybe. That sounds a little more difficult to balance, or like, maybe should each...
Because I don't think, I'm not sure if, because there's going to be a point where your third step down Citadel is probably going to have a better bonus if that's the only one you've been walking down than any of the first level ones. So I think you're going to need to scale up the amount of momentum to gain the next path.
Maybe.
It doesn't need to be huge. It could be like, it could be as small as like 5.
Well, you can make it so that different bonuses or different items in each step have different momentum costs.
Their inherent value.
Yeah. Well, I'm not
that'll,
sure.
That'll take playtesting, but it'll make the game better.
That makes it more complicated, to be fair. Or momentum would allow you to do the same thing where you could spend it to gain a plus on your roll, but it wouldn't be extra dice. It would just be plus whatever momentum you spent. And then I like the idea that momentum is, it tells the game system how important your character is in the story by allowing you to stay in the story, even if you're a lower level character, level being relative here, by making it so that if you roll something and the enemy's too hard for you to hit, but it's easier for everybody else to hit, and you have more momentum, you can just spend the momentum to hit it. And the more heroic things you do, the more the DM's like, that's 2 momentum. Here's another 2.
You felled the beast.
Yeah, you're doing a good job. More momentum. There you go. And but when you drop to 0 hit points, you're unconscious. And for every round you're unconscious for being reduced to 0 hit points, you lose 5 momentum. If you lose all your momentum and all your hit points, you're dead. That's permanent character death.
Unless otherwise stipulated in the rules.
Yeah, unless there's an exception, which you might. There might be a character trait.
There's got to be, because that's fun.
Path of the Zombie.
Or even just like a barbarian one where like, they ain't as dead as you think they are.
I ain't got time to bleed.
Well, I think barbarian is you could be at 0 hit points.
And just stay
up. But still be conscious the entire time, but you're still losing momentum until you start gaining hit points again. But that way you're running out of momentum while attacking. That would be pretty cool.
And then the whole thing is that's also a fun mechanic, because if you also keep killing people in your, you're like, well, he's gaining momentum while he's doing it.
That would be awesome.
That would be really fun. You'd end a battle and you've had no hit points for the last half of it.
That's like Life Tap with a warlock. Like, you're spending it as you're gaining it. That's really cool. That's a good idea.
I like that a lot.
What about you, Doug? Any mechanics you'd like to see in a D20 system, or mechanics that you're annoyed with that you'd like to do away with?
Well, I mentioned earlier the Indiana Jones system having a way to teach yourself or have other players teach you skills.
What was the mechanic for that?
I don't remember exactly, because it was over a year ago and I was really looking into the rules, but I'm going to have to look it up again. But I really like the idea, like we talked before about a classless system. Well, Indiana Jones is totally a classless system. You know, you pick...
Yeah, we don't have any class.
You know, you pick your character and you sort of pick the traits that would naturally sort of go with it. But if you're, say, you know, if you make a character who's like, say, a pilot, and you get the group from place to place, and maybe you're good with a pistol, and maybe you're good with punching people, and you're kind of a rough and tumble kind of guy, but when you guys are playing the game, you suddenly realize, oh wait, none of us are really any healers, and you think, well, you know, my character's kind of a worldly traveled experienced guy, maybe he knows a little bit of first aid, and you start down that path. Well, in theory, you could keep going down that first aid path and become a doctor. I mean, it would take a little bit of time, but the idea
is
that
your character's learning as they go, and they don't lose other skills.
Yeah, exactly. And you can in real life, you can in an instant decide you want to change your life and start working into another direction. So I really liked the idea that it, like, in the middle of the game, or a campaign rather, you can say, you know what, I really think I'd like to learn how to use this. I really like to learn how to speak this, or learn how to do this. And it's easy, and it's not, you're talking about the path of this and the path of that, and like, that's really cool, but to keep it feeling open, where it's not so much, I'm taking Path of the Citadel, I'm going to take Path of the Assassin, and it's really, you don't want to feel like an assassin, you just want to be able to do that one extra thing. So right. if there's an easy way to make, at least from a role-playing perspective, feel like there's an in-world reason on how you can do this, but I mean, that's also up to the DM, really. Because again, as a DM, you could be like, we're playing a cyberpunk future, so we're not doing the path of the mage, you know, or whatever. We're not doing the path.
I figure for each game module, you would have a different layout of paths,
different set of paths for each setting. Yeah, and I think that we're going to start with base fantasy, right? Because that's the easiest.
That's the easiest to figure out.
Yeah, I know that you Armistice is a modern.
So. It's a weird...
Right, but it's modern thing. With fantasy flavor, right?
Yeah. Well, it's just a fantasy world that just kept going.
Okay. So, and I think there's... If we start with fantasy, it'll be easier to translate to modern. Yeah. But we all want to play on a grid, right?
Yes.
Okay. So that's what our rules will be based around. And so far, in my experience, 4th edition was the most fun on a grid.
Yeah.
Although I'm not as well-traveled as I'm sure some of our listeners will be about the best grid-based system, but if you guys have any ideas...
I've played some Hex.
Comment.
Hex is all right.
Yeah, Hex grid. Oh, I mean specific systems.
Yeah.
Like not so much the actual battle mat itself.
So you think in the ideal version of this game, you could play on the Hex grid or the regular square grid, or is it like a preference?
No, I think you need to be specific because especially if you're going to deal with things like flanking, because if you're on a square grid, you have 8 spots to flank from. If you're on a Hex grid, I believe you have 6. So, and that's a pretty big difference if your group is very tactically minded.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I would like people to feel unrestricted, but still have a good idea of the things they could do. Like, so for instance, if you were like, oh, well, I had a bunch of, you know, I took a step down the path of the blue mage and I don't really like it. You don't want to have to worry about retraining. You just keep that and be like, well, maybe, you know, next session I'll try to do some more heroic things and maybe I'll get more momentum and then I'll just keep going down. Yeah, I'll be something else. I'll just, you know, I picked up an odd skill because you never get rid of odd skills you learn. Like in reality, you know, you don't have to trade in a skill you have that you don't need.
To learn to juggle, you don't have to forget how to whistle.
Exactly. So I think that will be, I mean, you will have some crazy motley characters as a result, but I really like that. I like that idea.
And as long as we build it so that they can still function.
Yes.
And I even like that because when you have this path system, the amount of characters you can get out of it multiplies.
Oh, yeah, it's
greatly.
Exponential. Yeah. Each path you add is an exponential increase.
Every time you allow yourself to step down, you can differentiate yourself from something basic.
Exactly.
And then again, you get to decide who you are. You don't just advance to who you are.
That's a good point. You do feel more involved in your character's progression than in 4th edition. Even though in 4th edition, you do get to pick the ability you get as you level up, but it's very confined to that role.
And usually a stat.
Right, and there's been a lot of games I've played where I create the character with a certain play style in mind, and then the group, as we're playing, I find out needs something else. So we had a paladin in a group that I played on Liam's campaign, and I was a warlord, and I was like, okay, cool. So we'll kind of like, you know, team heal. Paladin refused to heal, so I'm like, oh, okay, well. As I'm leveling up, I'm going to have to pick the healing things now. But I didn't build him as a healer, so it was tough to kind of force him into that role. Whereas in this system, it's just, oh, okay, well, I'm going to need to learn to heal as I go. So I'm just going to learn healing stuff now. But it won't exclude the abilities you had before. There's no penalty.
Do you think this game is going to be exclusively played on a grid, or is it going to be optional?
I think we should build it to a grid first, so that we know that the mechanics make sense,
right?
And then once that, you know what, I don't really want to worry about that. I think we'll play it to exclusively be on a grid because we want to play on a grid.
And I'd like to do something. If we're gonna start making decisions like that, or even if someone writes in and is like, hey, I would like to do it this way. I would like to be able to 10 pages displace rules to change it to make it modular enough to like, okay, here's some rule changes for you. I mean, if someone wants to be like, I want to play on a hex, who's like, all right, here's the 10 rules that this definitely affects that you'll have to change, and here's how you do it.
That'll take an immense amount of playtesting first.
Yes, it will.
But I'm stoked about it. We do base fantasy. Can we think of what I'd like to do is before we make any classes, we decide on basic mechanics if there were no classes. So what can a person who hasn't taken a step down any path do? You know, like what can you do regardless of what path you're on? I think that's a big thing. So we'll have to figure out skills, mm-hmm. how they work, how you make checks on things.
And what the base difficulty at level 1 is.
Yeah.
I think building everything to level 1 or, you know, bracket 1, whatever we're going to decide to call the base, and then let things scale on their own is a lot better than deciding, here's the beginning, here's the end, we have to fit everything in.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder if instead of... tracking levels, you can track
your overall momentum that you spent on your character.
Or if you just rate difficulties based on the amount of momentum they grant. But then again, if momentum scales as you level up.
What if it was, like you were saying, the story, like kind of like a lore thing? Like, who's going to hear about what you just did?
That's an interesting idea.
Fame?
Although if you're like a covert group.
Yeah, you don't
want to
say what you want.
But if you're not, let's say, if you defeat some thieves in a, you know, okay, a couple of people. But if you kill a dragon, who's going
to
hear more about that?
The other thing is, I don't want to have that be attached to momentum, necessarily.
Well, maybe just a difficulty rating.
Yeah.
Maybe that's all.
And they would give you more, like, you know, you decide what you want to do.
Yeah.
Do you want to be heard about or do you not want to be heard about?
A difficulty rating, maybe by color. You know, like, this is a green enemy. Like, this is a group of greens. This is a group of, you know, blues and stuff like that.
Cool.
I don't know. We'll have to think about that more.
Or even if we attached it, again, to the space where the character is. This is green to you.
That's tougher. Because you, I think if it's separate from your character.
Then you don't have to worry about it.
Well, if it's separate from the character, it'll be easier to drop a new person in and we're like, we're fighting a group of reds.
Yeah.
You know, like, shit's getting serious, and they'll be like, oh, shit, I don't know what to do. And it's like, well, you know what? The more you play with this group, the more momentum you're going to get because you're so out of your element. You're like, you must be an important person. You're going to get more and more momentum. But we need to hammer out how momentum works mechanically in terms of how it's granted. Because I think that
will decide how it's spent.
Exactly. So I think that's all I want to talk about for this first episode.
Yeah.
Next episode, we'll start coming into... We'll actually start with the nitty-gritty of base mechanics.
And I think momentum is the one we have to figure out first.
Momentum. I also want basic attacks, how do weapons work, that kind of thing. And maybe it might even come up with a few paths.
All right.
That are kind of touchstones for fantasy that we'd want to play.
Cool.
Everybody cool with that?
Sounds good.
All right. Definitely.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to RPG From Scratch, presented by Nerdy Show. If you like what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes, like and follow us on SoundCloud and Audioboom, or subscribe and stream us from Google Play. I've been your host, Josh LaForge, and I'd like to thank my homebrew hombres, Doug Banks, Liam Malone, and Max Wessel. Now remember, as listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any size contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network, and there's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow to find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming. Visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and other awesomeness, visit nerdyshow.com. And be sure to follow Nerdy Show and RPG From Scratch on all your favorite social networks. If it's geeky, we've got it covered.